Hey, well, welcome, teammates. This is Chief Master on the Space Force, John B9 Bentivania, with another Perigee podcast. This is number 32 in the series. And so today is going to be a really good conversation. We have some special guests with us today. We have some guardians that are dialing in from remotely, that are speaking from a spider phone that's sitting on my desk in the office. And I have someone in the office with me as well as we kind of jump into this discussion. So as always, thanks for tuning in, and hopefully we have a good time today and we get to share some information and get to connect like all guardians like to do. So I'm gonna start real quick with some introductions. So I'm gonna start with the teammates that we have dialing in virtually. So I'm gonna start with Captain Dustin Pescatore. Sir, if you would please just introduce yourself to everyone.
Good afternoon, Chief. And first off, thank you for this incredible opportunity. I'm Captain Dustin Pescatore. I'm a mission director and the operations deputy flight commander here at the 18th Space Defense Squadron at Vandenberg Space Force Base. Our mission here at the 18th is to provide a continuous, comprehensive, and combat-relevant understanding of the space situation. And I'll say this has been a challenging but incredibly rewarding assignment, and it's an honor to work with some of the most innovative and hardworking folks in the entire service here at the 18th.
Hey, sir, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. And thanks for joining us today. All right, we also have with us today Tech Sergeant Brandon Lebrecht. Will you please introduce yourself to everyone?
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Tech Sergeant Lebrecht with Delta 9 OneSops. I spent some time on crew, and I'm currently the Flight Chief of Operations. I'm really looking forward to discussing Spot for Gym with you all today.
Hey, Brandon, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. All right, we also have with us Specialist 4 Alicia Floyd. Will you please introduce yourself?
Yes, sir. Specialist Floyd, stationed at Buckley. I'm part of the 2 Swiss MPC, and thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. All right, and in the room with us today, we have Chief Caleb Lloyd from SPOC.
Hey, teammates. This is Chief Lloyd. I just want to start by saying thanks to SimCiv first for helping us kind of come together and talk about Spa4Gen, among many other things that I think, as we'll get into this, layer together as we continue to build out this service. I appreciate Captain Pescatore, Sergeant Lobrecht, and Specialist Floyd for joining us. And I think we're going to have some solid conversation here in a minute of kind of their perspectives, their insight, what they're feeling at the tactical edge, which is really what all of this is about, is how do we deliver combat credible capability at that level and continue to build them, to develop our teammates so that we are a ready force for whatever may come as we talk about, you know, the impacts of great power competition and the threats that we face now as a new service.
Thanks, Chief. I appreciate it. So we'll get started here. So, you know, for the last several months specifically, there's been a lot of dialogue, a lot of decisions made, you know, by the service, you know, at the AFA conference that General Saltzman talked about, you know, Spa4Gen, we released the officer enlisted and civilian roles and responsibilities. We started to define a unit of action, right, that the Space Force is going to present, that combat squadron that's there. How we train officers with the officer training course, which is a different model on what we expect out of future officers that are in the service, and that it's going to have impacts on how our enlisted guardians not only trained but employed, and then of course our civilian guardians, right, as part of the team, what does that look like? So just a lot of meat, right, that has kind of started to draw that vision of what it means to be a guardian in the Space Force. And, you know, kind of take a minute to kind of talk through that and kind of process and say, hey, so kind of how are we implementing that? What does that mean to us? How do we kind of embrace that vision and make action on it? Because it's going to take all of us. Like these things, you know, they come out of, you know, our senior leaders as they're trying to chart the path. But in reality, right, we know it's going to be, right, the men and women across SSC and STARCOM and SPOC and the service components, right, and people like Specialist Floyd, who are actually, right, implementing these visions and providing the capability that we say we do as a service. So it's just a lot going on. And today's, you know, it's just a great opportunity for us to kind of walk through that. So, you know, really, when you talk about, you know, especially the Spa4Gen model and providing combat capability, which is what we do as a service, you know, SPOC is kind of like that everything meets there. So Caleb, you know, you and General Miller have been trying to implement this. start with you on your thoughts on, you know, all the things the last couple of months specifically. How are you guys getting after it?
Hey, appreciate the question. And I think, you know, for me, as I look at this, you know, why we're doing this, that's really why all of this is happening. Why you go and kind of go back and start from the beginning of why service. And fundamentally, it's because the environment has changed. The threat has evolved to a point where we no longer is a procedures-based kind of mentality in how we do business sufficient. We owe the nation better. We owe our guardians better. And we have to have a model that captures that, that allows us to have the combat capability to present in a way that is meaningful to our senior leaders. All right, when you kind of peel back, and it's, you know, it's fun read, but when you look at the SPIFFI 10-401 that talks about Space Force generation, why that exists, how it feeds into the larger kind of context of the GIFMIG process, as we answer the Secretary of Defense and ultimately the President of Congress on what is the state of our readiness? What more do we need, and what would we do with it if we were able to get it, to increase our lethality, to increase our combat power capability in support of both the joint force, our allies, our partners, as well as really all of a modern way of life when we talk about what the impact of the space domain does. And so as we looked across where we were, right, kind of peeling back the onion a little bit, as we're 4 years in, rapidly marching towards our fifth birthday, okay, what have we done? Really, it was a lot of work just to get our feet under us, and you know this better than I do. And now, okay, we're there, we're on our feet. What are those things that we have to do to churn from, you know, CSOs kind of talked about the merchant marine versus an actual kind of blue water Navy, right?
Yeah, I love that analogy. I think that's really good. Yeah.
And that's where we're at. We're at that kind of precipice of, okay, moving beyond the hey, I'm churning through and I'm delivering capability, but it was not focused on how do I fight through a threat? Yeah. That's what we owe. And so we have to have a way in order to deliver. When we talk about actual advanced training, what does that mean? It's not, for me, it's not just more buttonology, more how do I operate the weapon system. It's thinking through a situation based on a threat that is there today. And what do you do? And how do you communicate across our teams, our deltas, in a way that integrates and aggregates combat power that we've never had to think through before? And so we have to deliver that. And that's really what this model will help us deliver as we go from commit, and then we go back into ready and prepare.
Yeah.
Those opportunities, and working with our teammates in STARCOM, working with our teammates here in the building, a policy and things that we need to adjust. Looking and talking with our teammates at SSC on how we deliver capability, and we bring this on. And this ties into some of the other things we've talked about, IMDs. What does that mean?
Yeah.
But all of this comes together to ensure that we have the capability to maintain the fight tonight while allowing the capacity to be there to actually train through in an integrated way that we've never been able to do before. And we're working through that right now. That's really been the focus in a mad sprint for these last couple months as we drive towards that.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the integrated mission delta, which is another thing. I didn't mention that, right? That was another thing we kind of transitioned the last several months. A lot of stuff going on. But, you know, so, you know, when we talk about, you know, Captain Pescatore, so when we talk about the changes that Chief Lloyd talked about and how we're trying to, you know, the presentation and deliver, you know, the capabilities, you know, the structure and the org chart and kind of what we call ourselves, at the end of the day, right, it's the guardians who are making it happen. And that was kind of like, you know, I think one of the foundational documents is the officer enlisted civilian roles responsibilities. So sir, as a mission director, you know, I'm assuming you've been doing ops for a while, sir. Are you a 13 Sierra? What's your functional area?
Oh yes, Chief. I'm a 13 Sierra.
So as a captain, sir, I'm assuming you understand the crew life and kind of the evolution. You've probably seen some of that, where we've gone. But when you look at the roles, responsibilities, how we kind of define that to kind of nest in the force that we need to prepare and present. I'm curious on your thoughts, especially as a mission director, when you think about, okay, based on those roles, responsibilities, where we're going, you know, what are your expectations as we look to shape and grow and develop the enlisted cadre that now is required to kind of fit into the model, do all the things that we just talked about?
Well, thank you for the question, Chief. I think here at 18SES, we fully understand that the spot for gen model is born out of necessity. And I think it's safe to say a conflict extending into space is a scenario that everyone wants to avoid. But we do have to be prepared to fight and win if we are called upon to do so. So I do agree that spot for gen is a way to ensure readiness, specifically for an employed in place asset like ours. And this is an asset that's just as vital as a deployable force. Speaking to the increased demand on NCOs and our enlisted guardians, I do think that shift will be positive. We're already sort of trying to increase our training and expectations here at our squadron to bring the NCO more up to an officer level of responsibility.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as a 13SR, and I'm an old 1 Charlie 6, you know, myself, I've been, you know, as a space operator, I work shift and crew, you know, through a lot of my career. And, you know, thinking about, and I've told you, I'm kind of excited, right, that the pivot that we get the opportunity to make here, and, you know, part of it, I'll be honest, right, in the Pentagon, a day doesn't go by where a combatant command, an ally partner, the joint staff, a three-letter agency, someone is calling the Space Force and said, hey, you got a good FGO that we can bring on the team to do some integration and some planning with us because we want some guardians on the team. And it's like, man, we don't have the capacity because, you know, we have some of those individuals, you know, maybe down at the tactical level where really, right, some of that talent, right, say, how do we unleash that talent to let them do the things we need to do as a service, you know, by that integration and service responsibilities, and then, you know, maybe leverage a little bit more our enlisted corps, especially our NCOs and our you know, specialist fours to say, hey, these are things that we have faith that you can do and execute. It's just getting maybe a little uncomfortable with things that we've been doing for a while, but the needs of the service to do the things that we have to do with the small numbers, it just requires for us to kind of shift a little bit. And it is sometimes, right, can be a little scary when you think about it, but what a great opportunity. So, you know, Alicia, what is your AFSC? What's your functional area?
I'm a 1 Charlie 6 as well.
So you were a prior airman, so before you came over to the Space Force, so you kind of been doing this for a little bit as well?
For about 3 years. I came in as a 1 Charlie 6, and then when it changed to 500, that's who I am now. But I think 1 Charlie 6 is more well-known.
Yeah.
I go by that.
So when you read, you know, when you hear what we just talked about and you read, you know, what we said that the expectation of the enlisted cadre, and you look at that, so where you've been, where you are today, where we think we're going. So what do you think about that?
Since I've been at Buckley, we've tried a few different models for the schedules. So it seems like when coming in, fresh, change is easier than people who've been doing it for a certain way for a certain amount of time. So it's difficult, but I don't think it's something that we can't adapt to.
Yeah, and I'll, so this is Chief Lloyd. I'll just add in that, you know, I think we've taken a lot of lessons from some of our teammates that, you know, we look at the WSOCs that we absorbed from the Army.
Yeah,
and you look at those detachments, roughly 60-ish people. Two officers, enlisted run crews, right? It's being done. We look at a lot of our intel organizations and those crews. You know, that's where I grew up for the most part, was doing a lot of the mission that is now in the 73rd ISR squadron, right, when it was under the Air Force. Those were enlisted run crews with a couple officers, right? We know this can be done, right? There's some cultural shift that we're working through. There's some fundamental changes that we got to do for the force structure. But, you know, when we look at and we talk about, you know, the focus that we put on our NCO development in SPOG for this year, this is part of it, right? This all ties together because this is where we're going. We're going to have our officers in those key positions doing functions that only our officers should be doing. And our NCOs can run the mission. They are the technical SMEs. We want them, right? When you broadly, whether it was before Space Force or after Space Force, right? Our NCOs, our enlisted force, were the ones who spent the most time in their career on mission. And that's where we're going. And the CISO, actually, I think he talked about that in his C-note, right, was the amount of time. And so we're going to continue to grow that. But at the end of the day, we owe you deliberate development. And this is what we're getting after with some of these initiatives in this last few months here.
So Brandon, as a tech sergeant, technical sergeant, right, as an NCO, what is your Space Force specialty?
Hey, Chief. So currently I'm a 5-0, but prior to this I was in the Army and did satellite communications, but more on the tactical side, Chief.
Oh, okay. So were you at a WISOC when you were doing satellite communications, or a different unit?
A different unit, Chief. I was more on the ground level, setting up dishes to connect to the satellites for teams to communicate.
Okay. So actually, this is you have bring a really unique perspective, I think, to this discussion. So when we talk about the pivot and the journey that we're on, specifically when we talk about the roles and responsibilities, you know, making that transition from being a soldier to a guardian, you know, based on kind of where you've been, you know, as an NCO coming up in the Army and kind of where you are today and the journey we're going on, man, I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on where you think we are and where you think we're going.
For sure, Chief. I definitely think we're moving in the right direction. A lot of the way we did things in the Army was we expected specialists or E4s to actually be team leaders and crew chiefs and taking over. So that's something we've tried to implement a little bit more at the unit that I'm at currently, is where all of the technicians felt like they were kind of stagnant and they were just doing tech jobs for the whole time. But we're now pushing some specialists through that and making them crew chiefs on crews and making that whole role just being enlisted focus. It used to be split between a deputy crew commander or a crew chief, but now we've changed that because of the OCE and changed it to where, hey, that's just an enlisted responsibility. And it affords a lot of our enlisted members more opportunities for leadership.
No, that's great. That's great. So, Alicia, when you hear him talk about, right, you know, having specialist fours, right, that you're a team leader, now that, you know, you have some that responsibility and, right, to kind of leverage your experience and the technical training to kind of lead a mission and lead several other guardians. How does that make you feel nervous?
A little nervous, but it also gives you more of a sense of being part of the mission, taking more ownership of that role.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. They said, you know, to kind of have the opportunity to kind of embrace that, you know. So, Captain Pescatore, when you look at, you know, at the 18th, when you look across your landscape on, you know, the enlisted, the specialists and the NCOs that you and your team are growing and developing and training, you know, and then when you think about, especially from a space domain awareness, right, all of the integration, all the planning, all the things that, you know, necessarily maybe sometimes outside of crew or even sometimes that occur on crew with mission planning cells, you know, when you look at kind of especially when you talk about the congested domain and how fast it's growing, I mean, do you think that the model we're going through, is this something that you think that we're creating the right baseline that we can leverage our NCOs and be able to use, right, our CGOs and FGOs to get after some of those other planning integration things? I mean, is this, do you see this as a welcomed type of pivot and change?
Thank you for the question, Chief. Yeah, there's sort of a lot to unpack there. At 18th, we manage the space surveillance network, which consists of approximately 45 sensors, which means we're processing 250 million metric observations a year. So that's a significant volume of data. So that really means that our analysts, our orbital analysts, our crew chiefs do require a high level of training in order to operate these weapon systems. So we have in since I've been here over the course of 2 years, we have been slowly giving the crew chief much more ownership over the mission and leadership opportunities. So I think that if we're going to set the expectation of a crew chief to act as a sort of a step in for the mission director, we just have to ensure that we're giving them the tools, whether that's at Airman Leadership School or NCO Academy, that we're setting them up for success in the same way we would an officer. Because I commissioned through Officer Training School, and that was a heavily leadership-based curriculum. Whereas like boot camp would be more, mental and physical.
Yeah. So you bring up a really good point, right? So we talked about the roles and responsibilities, right? But the training has to come along with it, right? We just can't, you know, write a paper and figure out how we want to empower individuals and not necessarily give them the tools they need to execute those responsibilities. So, you know, advanced training from a technical side is one of the things that we've been talking about for a while and the need to get after that. So from an 18th Space Defense Squadron perspective, how is your advanced training program and, you know, that evolution as we start to focus on the high-end threat, you know, from a space domain awareness perspective, how are you guys implementing that and how's it going?
Also, thanks again for the question, Chief. This is one I think that will bring up one of my concerns. We do have a robust advanced training program ran by our CTFK Weapons and Tactics Shop. However, I think like Spot4Gen's increased focus on operations will likely improve operational effectiveness in the short term. I do think there's a potential risk on straining our initial training pipeline, our eval shop, and our advanced training curriculum development down the line. And that's not necessarily something you'll see short term. I think we could probably maintain a sprint and do everything well for a few months to a few years. But I think down the line, there could be resource management issues in the sense that if we're focusing too much on operations and sustaining operations, we may not have the human capital to keep developing relevant advanced training scenarios for the team.
Yeah, hey, Captain, I think that's totally a fair point. And these are things, right, as we've talked about, as we get ready to roll into kind of our first iteration of this integrated cycle where we're putting all of our deltas, all of our combat power in the same vein, there's going to be some challenges, right? Because every delta has some nuances, and we know that, right? And so these are the types of things that when we say we have regrets, right? And you've heard Lieutenant General Miller talk about this is, hey, when we go into the cycle, there's going to be some things that maybe we're not 100% off. We're going to be yellow. Maybe we're red. But we've got to have a way where we're measuring that effectively. And to your point there, right, where we've pulled a lot of kind of the old way of doing business and we're putting all the experts back on the mission. Okay, well, what does that do to the force? What are the second and third order consequences that we think we're going to encounter? And then we capture those formally as regrets. And as we work through, okay, we have only so many resources. Where do we need to put those in order to get after some of these challenges that we may face down the line, right, in terms of training pipeline? I think the other thing that I'm finding that is goodness as we work through this, particularly with our STARCOM teammates, is the evolution of what they do. And what does STARCOM deliver in terms of training opportunities, experiences? As we talk about where, you know, what is the future of space flight? How does that look? We got to, this is all of these kind of aggregated things. When you go into the ready phase, is this aggregated, integrated, and this I continue to say, I'm going to beat that drum, way of thinking and discussing and having those communication contracts at the tactical level so that given any threat scenario across the board, we know who's doing what, we know who to call. When we talk about the leadership opportunity that our captains will have as they go on and they're the combat squadron commanders and some of our senior NCOs as they come on in each of these cycles as the senior enlisted leader for that combat squadron, like this huge development in both thinking through the day-to-day fight and then here are the challenges that if I just had a little bit more, I could have done this, I could have done that. And we have a way to actually effectively measure that and then message that back up the chain to help close those gaps so that we don't end up in a situation where because we didn't do that homework, because we didn't articulate clearly what we actually needed and why we needed it, that we don't get the resourcing in the long run.
Hey, Alicia, from your vantage point, you know, as I think you said that you're at a mission planning cell, you know, what does advanced training look like for you? Because to be honest with you, I'm unsure, and if you could share, as a member of the mission planning cell, are you integrated in a 24/7 shift work? Are you part of a crew or do you work a different schedule? And then, you know, how do you do advanced training for a mission planning cell today? And if you know where you're going in the future, what does that look like?
What we're doing now is we have a 2-week AT schedule. The mission cell the mission planning cell is tapped first to backfill the crews if there's any gaps in manning. We're also on call for high interest events. So we are pulled in a few different directions. We're still in the early days of figuring out what the roles and responsibilities for the MPC are going to be, what can we manage and what we can't manage. We're going through our first iteration of AT this week, actually. And unfortunately, we do have a lot of MPC members pulled in different directions. This AT was shortened to 1 week because the crew on Dwell had an abbreviated dwell because we just started the schedule, right? So they really only had 3 weeks to take their leave. So we shortened AT to 1 week so they would have time to take leave. So we're still figuring it out.
Good.
Well, hey, and I think, you know, this is all good points. And this is why I love having this conversation, because I think what you really highlighted there is the reality of where we're at today, right? Is we had to have a place to start. And there are going to be some hiccups as we go along the way, as we kind of reset from the, you know, dare I say, whack-a-mole kind of way we were kind of doing business into a standardized process where it's predictable, right? We got to get there. We had to start somewhere. To the advanced training pieces, right? We're going to continue to work through that. What does that look like? We've got teams that are working both from the headquarters perspective with the deltas down through the squadrons to define what are those advanced training requirements. And it may be that what advanced training looked like and what some of us may know and some of that muscle memory from, you know, years prior is different than where we need to be when we actually factor in the continued threat. And what does that actually mean? What do I actually have to train versus what is just kind of day-to-day normal operations? And so I think the point in your attitude, frankly, is perfect in the, hey, this is where we're at. It's not perfect. We're going to continue to discuss. We're going to continue to iterate, and we're going to get better each day.
Yeah, and I would add on to that, and, you know, the way you explained it, this is where we need, you know, leaders like all three of you as we work through this. When you say, hey, we're figuring it out, it may be different next time as is this time. You know, we're at a point in the journey as we're building this foundation where, you know, there isn't the playbook that we're able to hand down, right? Whether you're in Delta 9, Delta 4, or it's Delta 2, right? We're asking, this is the journey, the vision that we have. And, you know, based on your experience, you know, being innovative, right? And say, hey, how do we get after it and iterate and provide feedback that we know where we're going. We just may, right? We may not be all in step at the same time because we have different things we're working, but it's not going to be perfect the first time out. But, you know, the ask, I think, from me and I think from Chief Lloyd and General Salzman would be, like, don't give up. Like, we need your help and understanding that, you know, as we do this together, it's not going to be perfect the first time out. And, you know, when you're coming from a service, if you were a prior soldier with hundreds of years, right, of doctrine and experience, right, doing missions, or you're coming from the Air Force with, you know, 70 something years, right, where you've tried and true and learned, and now we're 4.5 years old and we're trying to work this, sure, it's going to be a little different. It's going to be a little challenging. We may be asking more of a specialist for today than maybe we will in 10 years from now. But man, what a unique opportunity to help shape that foundation of what future generations of guardians are going to experience based on, right, what we're going through today and the opportunity to kind of help provide that feedback and say, hey, this worked, this didn't. We have to shift. We have to stay focused on what the end result is and take steps to get there little by little, but not fall into, right, a sense of helplessness. You know, from an advanced training perspective and the infrastructure and kind of what's associated with all that, General Salzman uses the analogy where, you know, red flag out at Nellis, you know, that is like the capstone. That's the pinnacle. That's a gold standard for air combat, right? We have joint partners and allied nations come to red flag at Nellis all the time, right? Because they know that's where we want to go. That's what it is today. But man, when it started out in the desert of Nevada, it was a bunch of pickup trucks with painted telephone poles on the back, right? Acting as SAMs, right? Those were the targets. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at where it is today. But the thing is, right, they knew something had to be done. They started with what they had, and they continued to evolve it and move forward. But knew, right, we're not going to have a fully integrated range to emulate the threats as they really are. But they knew they had to start somewhere. So we're a little bit on some of this. I think we're a little better than a pickup truck. Right. But we're getting there. Yeah. But thinking about, right, years from now, the Guardians looking back going, man, in year number four, this is where they were, and look at where we are now. But in order for us to get there, we got to do it together.
And they're doing it, right? I was just out at Schriever last week. I think it was last week, and got to visit the space flag team. And I think one of the coolest things that I saw wasn't all the fancy screens and the cool, you know, SKT or STK readouts. It was the massive whiteboards that were just exquisite in their layout of all the plans and the orders. And so they're doing it today. All right, our teams are doing it. They're getting after it. Tons of road ahead to improve, but we're figuring it out, right? And I thought that was so awesome, the work that they're doing out there, really, to think through the threat and think how we – all the things I continue to say.
Yeah.
That we're integrating power for a fight that, you know, at the end of the day, we got to be able to overmatch any adversary, and they got to know that. And this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah. So, you know, as we've kind of had this conversation, we talked a little bit about, hey, you know, the roles and responsibilities, how they laid it out, right? Talked a little bit about the training, expectations that go along with that. But you know, it's all kind of coming together for the presentation model, which is the SPA4Gen model, right? It's the 8 crew model where, you know, you have your prepare, ready, and commit phase. And beyond the, you know, the training that I have and the responsibilities, right? This kind of gets down to the this is the lifestyle. This has now more impact, right, on what am I working? How long am I working? When do I get a chance to see my family? When do I get a chance to take vacation and take leave and go to school? So it all comes together, right, into this. So when we talk about the SPA4Gen, that kind of format, the way that we're looking to present forces, this is really where I want to know, you know, hey, Captain Pistori, right, Pistori. So you're out there at Vandenberg. I'm assuming you're on shift, you know, trying to do SPA4Gen, you know, kind of how is that going? Hopefully, sir, right, you still have time to go take advantage of Central Coast wine, get some good Pinot out there, go to Pismo, get some clam chowder, right? But you get a chance to do your job and get the training and do the things you got to do. So in this model, how is life for you and your family out there at Vandenberg as you are implementing SPA4Gen?
That's a great question, Chief, and I certainly have no complaints with the Central Coast lifestyle out here. with respect to the SPA4Gen cycle and how it affects crew operations, I have a unique perspective on that because I've been the squadron scheduler for the past 12 months, and I do have a question about, I understand that SPA4Gen does provide a level of predictability, which helps for family needs with respect to scheduling, child care, et cetera. But what are your thoughts on the potential concerns in retainability? Because knowing 3 or 4 months out that you're not going to be able to make a child's birthday or an anniversary is also stressful. So the predictability does not always help in those types of situations.
Yeah.
So my question is, as a service, how can we maximize the benefits of SPA4Gen? While also ensuring we don't inadvertently undermine retainability, because I've heard you say before that the philosophy of we recruit guardians, but we retain families. So I think it's important that we not only have to get the guardians on board with this plan, but also their families. So just interested, Chief, on your thoughts there.
Yeah. So, sir, now this is the real discussion, right? We're just warming up, right, to get to this. So, you know, Chief Lloyd and I have talked about this several times. So I actually asked Chief Lloyd, right, what – you know, hey, when you and General Miller, right, are kind of sitting around implementing this, how are you guys talking about it?
You know, I think he says it all the time. I say it all the time. And it's in our, you know, when we said win for win at the mission, win at our people, this is what we're talking about. Reality is, right, and I don't think I have to explain this to anybody, is our mission is 24/7. We are going to have to do shift work. This is just part of what we do as a service. However, I think that the benefits in the long run, I truly believe this, and having the predictability to know when you're going to have time off. When do I actually have to go back and ask, right? I think there's this narrative that when you're in commit that there's no leave. That's not accurate. Do we want you to go, you know, your fifth day into commit and you find a coupon to Disney World for 10 days and then you go and you ask your team, hey, suck it up for 10 days, I'm going to Walt Disney World? No, that's not what we're talking about here. I want you to think ahead, right? This is where crew integrity is really going to be important when we look at as we're going into our phases. If we've got regrets and where we're going to have manpower in order to maintain this crew integrity, that's important. We have to know those things. And so those are that's critical. But we get there, right? And we have some level of stasis with our crews. And it's predictable. Now, okay, when that thing comes up, a birthday, an anniversary, something that's just like that life milestone, and it's yours. Not everybody has the same thing every day. Like, we can work through that. This is where I would hope, as a service, we don't want the headquarters or SPOC coming down and telling you exactly what your leave schedule is and isn't, right? We want those combat squadron commanders and that leadership team, the SELs, to look through, hey, captain over here has a day of leave he needs to take. Yes, he's committed, but we can absorb that risk because Tech Sergeant Lobreck is going to come and cover down on it, right? So you've got to have that conversation with your teammates because somebody's going to have to come in and cover, but we can cover. And then when you come out of your commit phase, you got 21 days to take leave. Like, that's really a lot of what that prepare phase is, and you're going to get two of those a year. And then there's some slack in there. You've got time, right, in the shift schedules. It's not 105 days you're committed and every day we're working, right? You're going to have days off within those shifts. And you've got a little bit excess when we talk about kind of what those five crews do. It's built in. And so what's really important here, what I really think, and we talk about the families, is the mentality shift that this is not a job. This is a profession. And when we bring our families into the conversation, we help them understand what is being asked of us. This is a focus item that we've really tried to change in SPOC, and it's spreading, but something as simple as an award ceremony, just at the headquarters level. It used to be that we would just do it in the atrium real quick. Hey, great, congratulations. And we're on to the next thing. And that worked. But when you talk about your families and ensuring that they have the opportunity to see this be part of the conversation, we've moved. We've moved it out to our auditorium on base, and we bring them in. We talk about what's going on. We show them the threats at the unclassified level. They feel part of this conversation, and then they actually are able to work with you to articulate. And some things you're going to be able to miss, and that's just the hard part of being in the military. When we talk about sacrifice, this is it. This is sometimes you're going to miss those milestones. But if we're deliberate and we're taking care of each other, and you look at the crew level, and it's not just I come in, I high five the guy next to me or the gal next to me and say, hey, let's have a good shift. And then we go home our separate ways and we don't talk to each other. It's this opportunity to kind of bring back this sense of family is huge here. And I really hope that this will catch fire and we'll run with it and we'll embrace it. I know it's happening. We just gotta get the rest of the team that's like kind of dipping their toe in the water. Like, I don't know about this, but we're going to get there. And so I think, again, to answer the core question, when those milestones come up, that's where we got to have those deliberate conversations with our teammates and the leadership teams to say, hey, I need to take this day. This is really important. And we can get there. And if not, okay, well, here's why. We understand. We've talked with the family and they understand really the needs of what our nation is asking of us in a really kind of dangerous time around the world right now. I'll stop there.
No, thanks. And that kind of aligns with the discussions that, you know, you and I have had. And sir, thanks for asking that question, right? Because this is really some of the stuff that we, right, that I think is important for the five of us to walk through, but also for anyone who's listening to this podcast, right? Where are we going? So I think what Chief Lowe was saying is that, right, even in the commit phase, right, hopefully you remember when your anniversary is or your children's birthday, so we can plan that out, right? And that's why there's five crews, right? Because there's capacity in there. Hey, on Saturday, I'm taking my family out to dinner. Hey, Captain Smith, can you cover for me? Because I'm going to go out. But that's no different than, you know, when I work shift. That's right. We had the crew force manager, right? How many people, you know, had a work shift when I was doing missile warning at 2 Swiss back in the day? And we would kind of hook each other up and cover for events or things that we needed. But at the end of the day, right, there were certified, qualified members doing the mission, and it was executed at kind of the flight chief or the combat squad that wasn't a combat squadron, but the squadron commander unable to do that. So sir, hopefully that question that you asked is a real important one, but hopefully that maybe puts a little bit of your mind at ease that the vision isn't that during that 105 day cycle of commit, that no leave at all is We don't expect anyone to take leave. I think it's right if it's planned out and coordinated, we want to be able to accommodate that. But I think to say that no leave is authorized or allowed during 105 days is not necessarily where we want to go. Hey, everybody, this has been a really good conversation and one that we needed to have. But it's going a little long, so I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a pause here in episode 32, and we're going to break this into two parts. So please join us again for the next part two of episode 32. So we're going to end here, and I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you again soon.